DJ and last party we had.
Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook,
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. L-O-R-M-A-D-E 101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. Greetings and salutations. Today, we celebrate the re-election of President Barack Hussein Obama and the dawn of a new America, an America which I call America 2.0, one in which holds to its promise, one in which the meaning of with liberty and justice for all means something now. More than it has in the past. But before we get started, I'd like to say Happy Veterans Day to all of the veterans serving across this nation and the ones that have so diligently served throughout the many, many, many years. I am proud to say I've served in the United States Army for over 12 years, 11 months and 15 days with tours in Germany, Hawaii, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. I fought in Desert Shield and Desert Storm and was a part of the historic battle of the 73 Easting, which was a decisive tank battle fought on the 26th of February in 1991 during the Gulf War between the United States and British Armed Forces against those of what we used to call the Iraqi Republican Guard. Of course, I received many awards and decorations for my military service, most notably the Meritorious Service Medal, the Kuwaitian Liberation Medals for Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and the Southwest Asia Service Medal with 3 bronze stars. So again, to all the soldiers, airmen, yeomen, and Marines, I salute you. May God continue to be with you. Now, let me shift to the Commander-in-Chief. That's right, President Obama. I like to call this win America 2.0. I say that because it's in my opinion, my judgment, we now have a more inclusive nation. Mass participation amongst a lot of minority groups, but it's also a period where crazy doesn't win the day. Over this election cycle, the GOP and a large portion of its membership and leadership, I might add, were very disrespectful to the president, saying a lot of ugly things, and it really just took a turn in a negative way. Now, I was always saying throughout the entire time, if we are a national electorate that would allow that to win the day, then it would speak a lot about who we are in the United States as a people. But I am so glad that the American people stood up and said, enough is enough. America 2.0 is here to stay. And in my judgment, we are a lot better nation for it. Now, I want to take a look at an article in the Huffington Post, and it kind of sums up this re-election for the president. It reads, President Barack Obama did not just win re-election tonight. His victory signaled the irreversible triumphant of a new 21st century America, multiracial, multiethnic, global in outlook, and moving beyond centuries of racial, sexual, marital, and religious tradition. Obama, the mixed race son of Hawaii by ways of Kansas, Indonesia, Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, and Kenya, I might add, won re-election in good part because he not only embodied but spoke to that new America, as did the Democratic Party he leads. His victorious coalition spoke for and about him. A good share of the white vote, about 45% in Ohio, for example, 70% or so of the Latino vote across the country. According to experts, 96% of African-American vote and large proportions of Asian-Americans and Pacific Islanders. The Republican Party, by contrast, has been reduced to rump parliament of Caucasian traditionalism, white, married, church-going, to oversimplify only slightly. It's a catastrophe, said GOP strategist Steve Smith. This will have to be the last time that the Republican Party tries to win this way. The GOP chose as its standard bearer Mitt Romney, whose own Mormon church until recent decades discriminated officially against blacks. His campaign made little serious effort to reach out to Hispanic voters, and Romney hurt himself by taking far-right positions on immigration during the GOP primaries. He made no effort whatsoever in the black community. Obama reached out not only racially and ethnically, but in terms of lifestyle. Analysts made fun of the Republicans' derided. His campaigns focused on discrete demographic and social slices of the electorate, including gays and lesbians. But the message was one about the future and not the American past. U.S. Census numbers tell the story. In the first decade of the new millennia, the Asian American population rose 43.3%. The African American population, 12.3%. The Latino community, 43%. And the white population, just 5.7%. To be sure, the president won because of his stand on the issues, healthcare reform, Wall Street regulation, the auto industry bailout, among others. But his victory is something more, a sense that we are all in this together as a society, no matter who we are or how we live our lives. I saw this new America at the heart of the Obama reelection effort in their campaign offices. In one office in Virginia, for example, the local campaign manager was Pakistani American. The volunteers were of every race and background. The people headed out to handle the sign-up drive were Hispanic. And the event they were working on was a concert by Bruce Springsteen. This is what America has always been about. This promise. We have now come to realize this promise. Now, granted, we have a long way to go, but I guarantee you we've made tremendous strides over the last 8 years in that direction. What do you think about this? America 2.0. I want you to weigh in on this. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, Joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I want to know, what do you think about this new America that the author write in this Huffington Post article? And I want to know what you think about my monologue and this whole America 2.0. What's your opinion about this state of the nation that we're in the 21st century?
Well, I would have to say that where we are, I think, is where we've, you know, always seen ourselves as a nation, in terms of being a nation of immigrants. And so the fact that now, through no targeted effort of those that have been in power, those of us that have not been have found ourselves in positions that we've never been in before, and it has a lot to do with the changing of demographics. And so, when you this goes simply back to what Reverend Jesse Jackson has always stated, that when you level the playing field and you make things equal across the board for everybody to have access to, then those that have access and want access tend to rise to the occasion, so to speak. And so the fact that this particular president was elected by such a melting pot of the Electoral College, such a melting pot of the America that we are and that we have claimed to have been all these years, but we really are now, because it could not have happened to any other president and have the same type of significance that it has right now. So I think all of that weighs into the fact that where we are is precisely where we have predicted we would be, in terms of how our shores, quote unquote, have always been opened, and that because our shores have been opened, we have invited people in, and people have stayed, and they've built families and careers and businesses and all sorts of things. And so because of that, then you know, we shouldn't be all that shocked about it. I mean, maybe I'm not shocked because that's not my reality, but, you know, we shouldn't be that shocked that we have become a nation that looks like the one that we talked about in terms of the melting pot. You go back to ABC Schoolhouse Rock, and, you know, back in the day where they talked about the melting pot. So here we are.
So what's interesting to me is that you mentioned the melting pot, and you talked a little bit about the way in which the president has kind of used these forces. And I said this long time ago that this particular, what I'm going to call the Obama campaign doctrine, will be studied for years to come. I mean, people will do their PhD dissertations about that. And so if you juxtapose that against Mitt Romney's doctrine, campaign doctrine, and what was he missing? I mean, he touted for many, many moons that he was a data-driven person, right? He takes the data, and that's what he makes his decision on. But if you look at the data, we just mentioned all the growth in the Latino population, the Asian population, Pacific Islanders, African Americans, and you look at that data, and you look at the fact that the way the president won in the last election, if all the data was there, used by the president, why didn't Mitt Romney use that data to try to put himself in a better position?
Okay, well, you have two things there, and you know, they've made excuses since Tuesday night as to what happened. The bottom line is that the desire to suppress the vote was their strategy. Because if they had been successful in suppressing the vote, then they would have gotten rid of about 20 to 30% of eligible voters. And so since they claim, I think it was Dick Morris, who made the asinine statement that they were working off of the numbers from 2008 in terms of demographics and that those numbers had changed. Well, you were working off of those numbers from 2008 because you were counting on suppressing another 10% of those numbers. And I believe it was Karl Rove that even made the statement that if we just cut 10% of the voters in North Carolina, and he just said North Carolina, if we just cut, I believe he said 10% or maybe 20% of the voters in North Carolina, he said the president won't be reelected. So not only did they cut, I mean, and he didn't win North Carolina, but he won every other battleground state, so that strategy just didn't work at all. But that's what they were counting on. They didn't feel that they would have to court the number of minority voters because they didn't expect that number to be significant because all along they were anticipating voter suppression. They were anticipating that their spin of lies and untruths and manipulation would work because they are under the guise that if I say it, you have to believe me. And so because they were making the statement that the youth vote was going to be down, or that minorities wasn't, that the African American community was disenchanted with the president, so they wasn't going to come out and support, that he didn't do what he said he was going to do with immigration reform, so the Latinos was disenchanted with him as well. And I never even heard him mention the Asian American population. So there you have it. They wasn't even on the radar. So they talked about the youth not being as enthused and that the African American and Latinos were disenchanted. So they figured with that and the fact they were suppressing the vote, they didn't really have to do a whole lot. So they didn't.
So, well, let me ask you this, Dan. What do you think? How much of this do you think, Dan, was a part of the Get Out the Vote campaign and early vote strategy? Or was this too much of the Romney campaign reading their own press, meaning that watching Fox News, going with all of the stuff that the misinformed people on Fox News go with. So therefore, he made his decisions based on just that, some misinformation by Fox News, in other words, reading his own press.
No, he made the decision based on Karl Rove and him telling him you don't have to worry about that many people because their votes are not going to count. We're going to take care of those votes. That's how that, I mean, that I really believe that. I'm not being cynical. I really believe that it wasn't even about reading your own press. It was about people, and it really kicked off this February last year when all of that went down in Wisconsin, and people really started paying attention to how things are done, right, how these rules are set up, and they looked at what happened in Wisconsin with the recall of the governor. But not just about the recall, but what caused those people to want, what caused those senators, Lena Taylor and all those, to want to go into hiding. People saw all of that. And then it was early March. I know we started talking about in early March when we started hearing rumblings of these different voter suppression laws that had been voted in and was going to be on the books. People, you know, we started talking about it a lot earlier than mainstream media did. And I have to say, had it not, been for the lacks of, you know, the likes of Reverend Sharpton and Melissa Harris Perry on MSNBC, I'm not sure if mainstream would have picked up on it because it still took them a long time to do it. You know, in my opinion, they didn't jump on it soon enough. But we did have a couple of voices out there crying in the wilderness about it. And when you would get Michael Eric Dyson on or Dr. James Peterson or Goldie Taylor or Joe Madison on a show, they would bring it up in some kind of way. And I think, you know, even the media was kind of like, probably not that big of a deal. Oh, that's just something that they're talking about. I mean, you know, I don't think they even gave it the credence that it needed. So I think because of the state that enacted or tried to enact these voter suppression laws, were newly elected Republican governors, from what they called was the mandate against the president from 2010 elections. Because I mean, you know, let's talk about all of that. You know, they claimed that was a mandate with all the Tea Party people coming in, and they made up these false claims about voter fraud and all of these things they were doing. So Mitt Romney did not think he had to, on any level, engage outside of his own billionaire people that was funding his super PAC. Period.
Okay, so I hear you, and I understand where you're going. So let me ask a different question about this this suppression, if you will. So if the plan was to suppress the vote, and they said, well, we know we got these slim margins if we suppress the vote, then obviously we'll win. But their strategy, even though they were talking about suppression, was not necessarily to pick up any of the minority vote at all. I mean, they didn't even cater, in my opinion, to any of the ethnic groups that I mentioned in the monologue, nor did they try to appeal to the LGBT community, nor did they try to appeal to the women's vote. Not directly. I mean, at the end, you know, they started having Ann Romney come up and say to them, women, yeah, she got on stage, and you heard Mitt Romney try to go and several times it captured the women vote, but he messed it up when he talked about the binders of women. But in essence, their target was not the minority or these smallest constituent groups. So even though they were trying to suppress the vote, how is it that they think they could win not even trying to get those targeted groups?
Okay, here's how I can help you with that. Okay. Everything that they did was calculated, okay? So staying on the level of African Americans and Latinos are disenchanted with the president, so Mitt Romney goes to the NAACP convention, right? The president doesn't go to the NAACP convention. They made a big deal about that. Oh, see, we told y'all he don't care about y'all, right? They can't say anything about the LGBT community because that will go against their core belief system, their value base. So they just have to be on a peripheral and, you know, not even say anything about it. So then he has the town hall type thing on Univision for the Latino community. Now in the primaries he talked about self deportation and he had all these things said about immigration. I mean, so that's how they did that. And with women, it was Ann Romney who he was using as his surrogate for to appeal to women, because none of his policies will appeal to women on any level. So you take that into consideration. You take the little things that they did do, right? Plus, you add that to what they thought was going to be in play in terms of those groups still being disenchanted with the president, plus them working really hard to suppress the vote. So they did just enough to say they reached out. That's what they was counting on, because the NAACP convention was in July. So all that stuff happened in July. Then they go into the conventions, and then you go into the debates. So they did just enough to say they did something, and they were staking everything on low turnout, people being mad, the economy still being bad. I mean, his original argument was about the economy. So once the economy turned the corner, he had to come up with another strategy because that wasn't going to work anymore. So, you know, he failed on so many levels because he had one game plan. It's like when you play somebody that you've played before, and all you do is play them the same way you played them the last time, you got to expect that they're going to try something different. You got to expect they're going to do an – if you're playing football, they might try an onside kick on you. But if you don't prepare for that, and when they do it, you're going to look like you're not prepared for that. And he looked like, on so many levels, that he wasn't prepared. Whenever the president changed strategy, he wasn't prepared for the change. Because he had just thought, I can just be Mitt Romney. I am the white man from the Republican Party, and there's no way they're going to reelect this president. There's no way that can happen.
Okay.
And that was
that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit now about this notion, what I call America 2.0. But I want to use the two in another context, meaning that I want to talk about this thing that I call the race for second place. Now, if you look at the talk of the GOP, they say a lot about trying to make inroads into the Latino vote, but they never mention trying to make inroads into the African-American vote. So I want to take a quick break, but when we return, I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk a little bit about the fact that they publicly say that, yeah, we need to get the Latino vote, but they never mention the African-American vote. What's up with that? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We got the phone lines wide open, and we want to hear from you. So just before the break, I was talking about this America 2.0 and all of the wonderful things that we've accomplished since, of course, the President Obama has been reelected. You know, this is the first African-American president. He now has officially two terms. And he's been voted into two terms. He'll be inaugurated in January for the second term. And how important it was to establish the electorate of minority voters. I mean, you're talking about Latino, you're talking about African Americans, the LGBT community, weed heads. I mean, it's a lot of different people got out to vote this time. And of course, it made a difference, which is really our democracy in action. Again, I call this America 2.0 because we're trying to live up to the promise. You know, it says with liberty and justice for all, the freedom for people in America is coming closer to some realization. But I also like to look at that, too, and the fact that we're now, in my opinion, in this race for second place. If we're not careful, I see the GOP maneuvering or pushing the position in themselves to say, we're going to put one against the other. We're going to try to make them have this race for second place. When you look at the numbers geographically, the African-American community is more in numbers than the Latino community. But yet, when you look at the language that most GOP use after losing a clean sweep in this election, they focused on the Latino population. When you look at the numbers and it said that the Latino vote came in for Mitt Romney around 25% and for President Obama at 75-76%. But when you look at the African-American votes, it was in 96% or better for President Obama, which is 0-3% plus something for Mitt Romney. So why is the language that we hear over the airwaves and mainstream media, Fox News and others and the likes, talk strictly about the Latino population? You very rarely hear them say, yeah, we need to try to get into the African-American vote. Why is that? I need you to weigh in. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jima, what's going on here? Why is it that they just focus on the Latino vote and not even mention African-Americans in most cases?
That's because when you look at the numbers that Republican presidential candidates have received over the last three elections, you go back to George W. Bush, I believe he got like 41%. And ever since then, it's been on a steadily decline. And so they have a fear that they can make no inroads in the African-American community with Democrats for whatever reason. And that's not necessarily true. I heard a commentator say the other day, Warren Valentine, that said, if you look at the ideals of most African Americans, we tend to be more conservative in our thought process than what conservatives give us credit for. And so if they were to change their message a little bit, they probably would appeal more to people of color, especially African Americans. So they really could do better by doing that. But since they don't think that they pull, you know, I'm just using words here, pull us away from the Democratic Party, so to speak, then they're going to focus in on the next group. And for them, the next group is the Latino population. And I like your analogy in terms of race to second. I find that interesting that you know, who wants to be number two? You know, who remembers number two? But, you know, I think that's because they feel as though they have some there's some daylight there in that community that they don't see, that they don't think they have with African Americans. But when Michael Steele isn't drinking the Kool-Aid, and when Armstrong Williams isn't drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, they make some valid points for there to be some inclusion. And when you look at it, and this is just a side note, the world according to Jima, you know, they really should go back to what Michael Steele was doing, because it was under his leadership that they did regain the House. That wasn't under this current RNC chairperson. So they really want to fault somebody for their loss. They need to fault their RNC chair, because obviously he missed some of the things that Michael Steele had put into place to kind of help them bridge some of those gaps. So
I think it's just one way, another way of what you stated of trying to pit us against each other. I know they were talking about this on Reverend Sharpton's show, his radio show and his TV show, and I even believe Ed Schultz was talking about it on his show, and Martin Bashir as well, in terms of, you know, now they're wanting to pit these two groups against one another, and that's why we've got to be extra vigilant in terms of solidifying our core and our support of one another, as opposed to helping them to divide us, so to speak.
You know, I use that analogy because I go back to and think of the slavery days, and I'm going to bring it home here in just a second. I don't use it in the context of just the fact that I think that they need to be against each other, but I use it in the context of this. If you make the assumption that I am a white man and I will always be in power, then I need an ally. I need an ally that can trust me, that I can get to believe everything that I say, do, and every move that I make. I need an ally that I can say we have the same spiritual values. I need an ally that says we have the same moral, ethnic values, right? If I get that ally to be on my team, then it makes it much easier for them to have that fight for that second place. Because I'm making the assumption already as a white man that says, hey, look, I'm going to be in power. I got the money. I got the power. I got the legacy. I own this. I am America. You are just being next. And so who's going to be next in line? And I use that in the same context what they did when they had the African-American slaves, the black slaves, the Negro slaves, because they said that I am massa. I am in the big house. And so in order for me to increase my position of power, I need to separate the lights. I'm going to take the light skin and separate them from the dark skin. I'm going to have the ones that's going to be in-house, and I'm going to have the ones in field. Now I have that separation where the turmoil is no longer directed towards me. It's directed towards those two groups. Then you have this fight to second place. You have this fight for someone trying to be next to the man, next to massa. But no one ever tries to fight me because I'm the man. And so it's going to be interesting how America 2.0 positions itself if we're not careful in the fact that a person can maintain their power if they use that strategy against those two next groups. Because when you look at the numbers, Latinos are, it is true that they're increasing in population, but they're still not the second in majority. So it is, to me, is ludicrous to think that that constituent group can put you in a better position to be in power. So it is incumbent upon the minority groups to do exactly what President Obama did, come together as a group, and also include the majority group, Caucasian Americans, in that group, and then we have a more equalized playing field. But if we're not careful and we fall into this new GOP trap that they're about to lay down, then you're going to have that fight for second place, and that is what I'm talking about. So I want to talk a little bit about Florida for a minute, and then we're going to kind of move out for presidential politics and kind of keep on with our military theme and talking about General Petraeus. But
okay, before you go to Florida, though, I think we must just brush the stroke a little bit harder and deeper in terms of the ground game of President Obama.
Yeah,
underscore. I mean, you mentioned that it would be studied, but I think we really need to understand what you mean by that.
Yeah, so let's talk about Florida in that context, right? So Florida has been red for many, many, many moons. And it is a very hard to gain momentum in that state because of, I mean, look at what happened with Trayvon Martin, for example. Look at the laws when it comes to education. Florida was the place where they were talking about the welfare, taking drug tests. It's a lot of stuff going on in Florida that's kind of the old dirty South. And for the president to take hold, and ultimately, if you haven't heard, he won Florida. Now, we know that Mitt Romney conceded Florida, but he won Florida. So the question is, and to your point, Jima, how did he win Florida? And that, my friends, is what I want to talk about next, the ground game of President Obama. So, Jima, let's talk about a little bit about the ground game for a minute. When we say the ground game, it's interesting because people used to poke fun at the president because he was a community organizer. What do you think about his skill set now that he's won a second term?
Well, I would say that some of those Republicans wish they had some of those skill sets, because it was those skill sets of going out talking to people in areas that you had nothing really in common with, except for that you wanted to do right by their community, of being able to meet people where they are and just kind of have a conversation with them is what propelled, in my opinion, President Obama to the second term. I mean, when you look at the ground game, and by ground game, I mean, when you look at the fact, I think they said he had well over 300 field offices in the state of Ohio, and they've been there since 2009, you know, since he was in, they didn't leave Ohio. And so they've been there, and they have built relationships with people and relationships with those in those communities across the state. And you look at every state, probably outside of Alaska and Hawaii, had at least, I'm going to say probably 10, at least 10 field offices in their state. I would guarantee you that. I would guarantee you that. And by that means people are on the ground. They know what's happening in the state. They know what things are important to people. They have taken up, you know, residency basically in those states for those years to get ready for this time. So they didn't just start campaigning. The president may have started campaigning once he announced, you know, his bid for reelection, but the Obama for America people have been on the ground for the last 3 years, 3.5 years. And so that's how you build coalitions. That's how people can stand by you and say, I know what you stand for because you've been here with me this whole time. It was two stories that was interesting to me. One of them was they said it was a young lady who had gotten sick in line. I think it was Florida or Ohio. I'm not sure. But her and her husband were going to go and vote. He had voted. She had gotten sick in line, had to go to the emergency room. And at the emergency room, a FOA worker met them at the hospital and gave her her provisional ballot so she could fill out her provisional ballot while she was at the hospital.
Yeah, that was the lady, that was the young girl that was pregnant. Yeah, absolutely.
No, not the young lady that was pregnant. Not that one. The one that was pregnant voted. She
okay.
was having contractions while
was
she was voting.
Two of them.
If you were listening to talk radio on the power or on the left on XM, you hear numerous stories like this.
Right.
Numerous stories where those workers on the ground were right there and ready to do what they had to do. They're not going to let anything deter them from what their mission. And that was to make sure that every vote counted. So when you're talking about Florida, actually Florida really didn't even matter. How great is that? That after all that governor down there did, Rick Scott tried to do, you know, cutting down the early voting days, trying to purge people's names off of voting rolls and, you know, cutting down the hours and people standing in line for 8, 9 hours to early vote. Just craziness. And at the end of the day, Florida didn't even matter.
Right. So that's why I wanted to kind of to focus on that state for just a moment, because of all those things you just talked about. For the president to win that state ultimately, it didn't matter. Now, he had won, you know, hours and days before they even called Florida. But, you know, it's a sentimental value, as we used to say, when we get wins like that. Because of the fact that they did try to cut the days of voting, they tried to suppress the vote, they tried to purge rolls. I mean, they tried to do a number of things to kind of get people to win. So you can imagine the people that were unable to vote because of all the things that they put in place. Now, granted, at the end of the day, a lot of those things were overturned or didn't have a traumatic impact, but they did have an impact. And so for the ground game to be able to surpass all of those things, I thought was wonderful. And what I mean by this ground game, from my perspective, this is what I mean. You mentioned the first, which is the fact that relationships were built. I heard one of the pundits on one of the talk shows say, well, it's interesting to see that President Obama gets in, you know, a year before Election Day, and he tries to establish all of these, get all these people to get out to vote campaigns. But the reality is that's not true. After the 2008 win, President Obama had those field offices in there, and he stayed in contact with everybody. That is why when you see the media on TV talking about Obamacare and saying all these things, he was sending out this social media campaign to talk about the facts. They had emails of all of the people that participated last election, and they stayed in contact. I know they stayed in contact with me. I got an email from them every day for 4 years, and I just said they asked for donation every other email. But granted, for every day of his election, I've got some correspondence to say, this is what they're doing. This is a YouTube video. Here's what I'm doing in this state. Here's what this means. And so there was a relationship built between me as I was in the White House for the most part. The second part of that was the social media campaign. They met people where they are. Just like you say all the time, meet people where they are. That's exactly what they did. So they didn't use mainstream media for all their interviews. He went on, on The View. He went on, sports shows. He went on every, Sesame Street. He went on every other media outlet, all the late night shows. John Stewart. I mean, so he went on all these other meetings because he wanted to meet people where they were. And then, of course, you talked about those field offices. Those were community people that knew the people in their community. They knew what the data said, that we need to make sure that we are located in this particular district. We know these are the unregistered voters. We know we need this many registered voters in order to have an impact. And they were there every single day. Now, that's a ground game for you. So what do you think, Jima, that Mitt Romney underestimated about President Obama's ground game?
He didn't just underestimate Obama's ground game. He underestimated the American people. He underestimated our level of intelligence. He underestimated our moral fiber. You got to remember, you go back to when the president made the statement that he would support gay marriage or gay, equality in marriage or whatever, and how they tried to make that a quote-unquote wedge issue in the black community, because everybody knows, and I'm being facetious here, everybody knows that in the black community, gay rights is just not something that you talk about. It's an evil thing. You're going to die and go to hell. So let's just make that be the biggest issue. But that, people forgot about that.
Yeah, Bush was effective at it last election when he did it against Kerry. Yeah, he was effective at it. But
right. Well, he was effective at it, but because we didn't have Twitter and Facebook. See, things are different
right now.
Media has changed since Bush did it against Kerry in 2004.
Yeah, we tell our own truth nowadays, yeah.
Right. Things are a lot different. And so you're looking at it that way. So I think Mitt Romney, if you go back even to the primaries of when they were trying to figure out who they were going to nominate, we knew it was going to be Mitt Romney because all the other people was real crazy. We pegged Mitt Romney to be kind of crazy, that if he take his meds, he'd be okay. And we figured the other people needed to be institutionalized. So it was going to have to be Mitt Romney. And we knew Mitt Romney didn't have a core. You could not hold anything up to him that's going to stick. And we knew that back then. So what he thought is that everybody would get amnesia all at the same time, that he didn't really have to work that hard. I don't know if you've ever worked with people that think that just because they know who's in charge, they don't have to work as hard as everybody else. So Mitt Romney thought,
yeah,
I have the money, I got name recognition, I got these billionaires, putting money into, for me, I got Karl Rove, the architect of George Bush, getting elected and reelected as the front man for all the money. So I really don't have to do a whole lot but just show up. So I'm just going to show up, say a few words that won't nobody remember that's what I said. So that's about how he ran his campaign. So I don't really care who they would have had up, because I think the attitude would have been the same, because they were basing their strategy was on fear, was on lies, and was on continuing the racial divide. And that was what they banked on. And they banked on people of color, particularly African Americans, and particularly youth, on not voting because jobs haven't been created, the economy is not where it's supposed to be, and all these other things. But what they didn't count on was their own self-implosion, because that's exactly what they did. It was unforced errors in the world of football. It was unforced errors because
okay.
a lot of stuff, when you have the senators and all these people making all these statements, they didn't have nothing to do with anything.
So here's a problem I think that we're going to have moving forward, though. Now, although President Obama had an amazing ground game, right, and we all know how well he was organized because he was a community organizer, in air quotes, right? And people poked fun at that for many, many years, and it showed out to be one of the most one of his best assets, being able to do that. And even at the presidential level when he has dispatched Pluff and his other people to actually do the work. What's interesting, though, is that Citizens United is still in the balance. It is still out there, and it didn't have an effect on this election, but it could have a profound impact on elections moving forward. I don't know if there's another person like President Obama that's going to be able to move or move a machine in the way he did. I don't know if there's a cause that's bigger than the first black president. I don't know if there's a cause that's bigger than health care and all the things he's done in the past that's going to galvanize the people. With having said that, then, what is the true impact of a Citizens United decision moving forward? Because right now, I don't believe we even felt a piece of what it could really do, of the impact it could really have on the electoral process. So although the president was amazing at that, but you're only going to have one giant, amazing election like this in our lifetime. It won't be another President Obama. It won't be another election that's ran like this. So the question becomes, will Citizens United rear its ugly head in the elections coming ahead?
But at some point, all the ads begin to run together anyway. And so if that's the treat for my television, I just turn my TV off. Or I just do it. So I'm not even hearing all that stuff. So you have that. Then you got that now, I mean, maybe you have, or the independent side, we can raise some money to those billionaires. I mean, ain't like just Republicans and the money. I mean, you know, let's just keep it real here. So it makes more than people that people they have like 5 million people that.
Right. So we having a little technical difficulties right now with Jim's line. We'll get that corrected in just a second. But I just wanted to kind of right before we take our last break here, I wanted to kind of weigh in on the fact that Citizens United again, the fact that you know, President Obama did an enormous job at galvanizing the people, the campaign, the data that he had, all of the information that was dispersed, all of the social media galvanizing behind him as a presidential candidate. And I know Jimmy was mentioning that, yeah, all those you know, big money spenders won't have a thing, a leg to stand on if the American people get out and vote. But the problem is, sometimes we get complacent, if you will. We get kind of lazy, and we don't participate in the electoral process. And more importantly, the issues that are not like national issues, a lot of times we don't get involved in them. And so what frightens me is the fact that we're in a position where if we get health care to pass, if we do something about our educational system, and President Obama has a successful 4 years. Going forward in the next electoral process, we might be in trouble if we're not careful. Citizens United is going to go back and regroup. you know, you have a lot of money to invest. They have a lot of time to go back and look at what, you know, what went right, what went wrong. And, you know, I don't know if we have another candidate that's going to be, that's going to put in what President Obama has put in. I don't know if we have a candidate or electorate that's going to be that enthusiastic about issues going forward. I mean, of course, if we have a woman president or the first Latino president, I think that will probably do a lot of good for the Democratic Party moving forward. But if not, Citizens United could have a profound impact on our electoral process. So I don't want us to lose sight of that as we move forward. And we just need to continue to pay attention. We're going to take another break. And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about General Petraeus. What do you think about that? Isn't that weird? What's going on? Is there something? Is the cat on the line? Is there something in the milk ain't clean there? Is a dead cat on the line? What's going on here? General Petraeus up when we come back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask FEMA, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. Tens of thousands of homes and businesses in New York and New Jersey are still without power, almost 2 weeks since Superstorm Sandy hit. NPR's Quill Lawrence says tenants at Brooklyn's Red Hook housing projects have no heat.
Some of them still don't have electricity. They're using gas stoves with pots boiling on them to stay warm. Today is unseasonably warm, but last week's cold weather has reminded them that this can't go on for much longer.
Meanwhile, thousands of people forced out of their homes by Sandy are looking for temporary housing and not having much luck. Most hotel rooms are occupied. On this Veterans Day, President Obama paid a visit to Arlington National Cemetery, where he laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. NPR's Allison Keyes was there.
America, America. Men and women from every branch of service, old and young, sat under the brilliant sun to watch their newly elected commander-in-chief honor their service.
You and your families have sacrificed to protect that powerful promise that all of us hold so dear. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Olga Bell honors the nation's vets, but she's clear on why she's here less than a week after the election.
For the president.
Francisco Santana says it's nice to have the president here, but
I don't think that's the focus for the ceremony.
He says this day is about honoring those who keep the nation safe. Allison Keys, NPR News, Washington.
In Paris, French President François Hollande laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier to mark Armistice Day. It's the first year that all of France's war dead are being honored, not only those who died in World War I, as NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports.
In his first official Armistice Day ceremony as president, François Hollande reviewed the troops and placed a wreath at the Eternal Flame under the Arc de Triomphe. Hollande was accompanied by the children of soldiers killed in Afghanistan, and later he paid homage to students who defied a German order in 1940 not to commemorate Armistice Day. November 11th marks the official end of World War I when the guns were silenced on the 11th minute of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918 when the armistice was signed. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The disparate factions in Syria trying to topple the regime of President Bashar al-Assad have agreed to form a coalition, and they've chosen a top cleric in Damascus, who's seen as a moderate, as their leader. The U.S. and other Western countries have been pressuring the different groups to unify in order to receive more international support. The new leadership is aimed at curbing the influence of exiles and including activists who are working on the ground in Syria. Today's deal comes after more than a week of often contentious meetings in Qatar. This is NPR. The International Monetary Fund predicts most economies swept up in Arab Spring uprisings will recover slowly next year as they confront high inflation and rising unemployment, due in part to the weak global economy. In its biannual report, the IMF says a partial return of stability in Egypt, Jordan, Tunisia, and Yemen could allow for slightly faster growth next year. In the next few hours, the Greek parliament is expected to approve a budget for next year that includes tax increases and spending cuts. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis reports the Greek government hopes the vote will unlock bailout loans the country needs to avoid bankruptcy.
Unions have called for a demonstration outside parliament today to protest the budget vote. They say austerity has deepened the recession and spiked the unemployment rate to more than 25%. Anti-austerity protests turned violent last week before parliament voted for new cuts to pensions, healthcare spending, and public sector wages and jobs. But Prime Minister Andonis Samaras says these cuts and reforms are needed for Greece to avoid insolvency and a eurozone exit. He's hoping tonight's budget vote will convince eurozone leaders to give Greece its latest installment of about $40 billion in bailout loans before the country runs out of cash later this month. Eurozone finance ministers will discuss Greece at a meeting on Monday. For NPR News, I'm Joanna Kakissis in Athens.
James Bond has shot to the top of this weekend's box office. Skyfall brought in nearly $88 million in its first weekend at U.S. theaters, a record for the Bond franchise. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We've been talking about presidential politics here, and more importantly, we've been dissecting the Obama win and the Romney lost, if you will. We talked a little bit about the ground game and all of the missteps that Romney has taken. We want to now shift to General Petraeus. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but there's a relationship leads to this book scandal for Broadwell. And Reuters is reporting when Paula Broadwell first met David Petraeus in 2006, she was a soldier-turned-graduate student at Harvard University. The acclaimed U.S. Army general gave her his card and offered to help her with her studies. Broadware soon began trading emails with the general, and 4 years later, she was in Afghanistan turning a dissertation about his leadership into a book published this year entitled All In. Now, interviews for the book often took place on endurance testing runs together, she would later say. That was the foundation of our relationship, Broadwell said, of their runs when promoting the book on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show TV program in January. That relationship is now at the center of a scandal that has not only ended Petraeus' short tenure as director of Central Intelligence Agency, but also badly tarnished the reputation of a revered military leader. And it has raised awkward questions about whether the White House and any linking of the problem before November 6th presidential election. Until now, the 40-year-old wife and mother of two young children had appeared to excel at juggling scholarly pursuits, family life, and military career, triathlons, charity work, and even demonstrations for a machine gun manufacturer. She has obviously achieved a lot in her field as a soldier and a scholar, said Ed Williams, a neighbor who lives two houses down from Broadwell in a leafy, affluent Charlotte, North Carolina neighborhood. Everyone is surprised and shocked, Williams said. Jima, I'm going to ask you a question. Are you shocked by this at all?
Yeah, I am.
Why are you so shocked?
Just how did this happen? Well, not the literal how did this happen, but how did this happen?
Well, let's look at the facts. He's a soldier. He's in the military, and we have this young lady that has befriended him. I mean, they shared several emails and the likes, and, you know, voila. I'm pretty sure if you ask tons of military people, they can give you similar scenarios.
Okay, but he's just not your typical military person. This is the director of the CIA, right?
He's a soldier, though. He's a soldier. He didn't start out being the director of CIA.
It doesn't matter what he started out as. This affair happened, and when he was director of the CIA,
the affair we know about started as CIA.
This only one we can talk about is the one we know about.
That's correct.
The one we know about happened when he was the director of the CIA. You can't keep your affair secret, and you're director of the CIA. You can't keep us secret. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of. But I just stole that from Star Jones. So I give her credit. She just tweeted that on Twitter, you know. So I'm just kind of like, that's kind of bad. And then the fact that she was looking for another woman that he was allegedly having another affair with. Your side piece ain't supposed to know about your other side piece, or it just defeats the purpose. So.
Sounds like you're talking from experience.
Ooh, that's funny. I haven't ever knowingly been the side piece. I hear that now. But, you know, so it just begs to question a whole lot of things when you begin to question his judgment. And because of the position he's in, yes, he's a man, but, the same standard is there. When you reach a certain level and you have certain things expected of you and that are expected of you based solely on your position, then you have to own up to those and you have to step to the plate and you have to honor those, whether you want to or not. It's bottom line.
All right, I'm going to ask a question, and this is going to be interesting. Whose fault is it? Her fault or his fault? When I say her, I'm talking about Paula. When I say him, I'm talking about Petraeus. Whose fault is it?
Who's Paula, the chick?
Yeah, Paula Broadwell is her name. Mm-hmm. Whose fault is it?
It's his fault, because if he was taking care of Paula, you asked the question, right?
No, that's your opinion. I heard you. I hear you. You saying it's
okay,
your opinion.
But,
okay. Right, right.
Right, but you asked the question. Whose fault? My answer is, it's his fault,
Because if he was taking care of Paula, Paula wouldn't be having to snoop through his email to see if he was messing around with somebody else.
Taking care of Paula and taking care of somebody else is two different things. He could have been taking care of her. Maybe she was jealous of him taking care of her and somebody else.
Obviously, she didn't feel secure enough. Because when you feel secure about your status, you don't go looking for something to make you feel less than. You secure. Now, when you're not secure is when you going through the cell phone and you trying to get their password to their email. You know, that's when you start looking for stuff. You don't just arbitrarily look for stuff because you don't have any reason to look for it. He hasn't given you any reason to look.
But what could she be looking for? He married. If for her to be looking for somebody else and she is that somebody else and he's married, there's nothing she could do, nothing he... I mean, she did what she could do, I'm sure. But there's really nothing she has no leg to stand on by doing this. So what was her purpose of going through his emails and looking for passwords and all those other things she was doing? I mean, what's the purpose of that?
Because she could. And he gave her some sort of access. Obviously, he had her convinced that she was number one on the side. I mean, she knew he was married. You know, I think she married too, so... You know, she just got caught up in that whole cycle You know, I'm okay if I know I'm number two, but now I might be number three and four. Oh no, I can't handle that. I didn't sign up for number three and four. I didn't sign up for three or four. So if I'm finding out I'm somewhere else, you know, I need to figure that out because that is, well, you doing me dirty.
Well, it sounds like it's her fault, not his then.
Now, it's his fault because he obviously gave her some impression that she was no longer number two.
Yeah, but
I don't buy that. Of course you don't buy it. You're a man. I'm a woman. I see it. So this is night and day. We won't agree on this one. Guarantee you.
I'm not looking at the green. I'm just looking at the facts. I'm just saying the fact is that she was at fault.
For what?
For going
for having the affair in the first place?
Exactly right. For having the affair, luring him in. And then, after she don't lure him in and seduced him and then put him in a position that he couldn't help but to do it, then she's going to start snooping around his email. It's her fault. David Petraeus is a honest man. He's a family loving father, husband, soldier, and for her to take advantage of him like that, I thought that was just ludicrous.
All of what you said, you sound like Mitt Romney in his camp as to how they lost the election. They just making up stuff.
I'm just saying she took advantage of it.
You sound like Carl Rove did when they called Ohio. I just want you to know.
negative.
You need to go back because the facts are, the real, you know, not the make-believe facts, but the facts are that they both wrong because it shouldn't have never happened. And if whoever pursued whoever, the one being pursued should have said, no, we can't do this. And not fell prey to the trap, as you call it. So either way, nobody gets off here because both of their lives now are forever tied to this event.
Yeah, no matter what
they come out,
yeah.
Right.
Now
whether they come out
that.
Of it or not, you know. So.
Yeah. So
that's it.
Just to add clarity to the story, the FBI investigation began when an individual reported suspicious and strange emails allegedly from Broadwell. The FBI determined that Broadwell allegedly emailed a number of government employees, and it tried to determine if any of its employees were being stalked. The affair was unveiled as a result, with Petraeus being one of these employees. The FBI eventually determined no criminal acts has been committed. The decision abruptly ends the public service career of one of the military's most valuable, most vaunted leaders. He led the surge in Iraq and was later tapped to lead U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan. Following 2 years at the helm of U.S. Central Command in April 2011, Obama again tapped Petraeus to lead the CIA. He leads just 3 days after the president was reelected the second term. So as you talked about earlier, this is over. He will all forever be remembered by this.
Right.
This
so whatever she was working on in his biography, his autobiography, you know, how do you end it on this chapter? I mean, really.
Yeah. So was it worth it?
Where do you go from here?
So was it worth it for her? I mean, she was not real well known until now. This is kind of like the Monica Lewinsky of Clinton's term, but it just didn't happen to President Obama. It happened to Petraeus.
Maybe, and who knows what really is going to come out on this. I mean,
you got to look for the dress.
Well, I don't think we got to look for the dress. We need to look for the data. We need to find, follow the trail, follow the money, because I'm pretty sure there's some money involved somewhere. I'm pretty sure there was some inappropriate and some misuse of government funds somewhere.
You about to open up a can of worms.
I'm just saying.
Your connection got distorted a few minutes ago.
So, you know, how did this, not the how in the literal how, but the how in the how did this happen? You know, you going over to Afghanistan, interviewing him for his book. Who said that was even okay? Let's talk about that. You know, and so there's been some improprieties, in my opinion, happening here.
Okay.
Some government money was spent on a book that we ain't going to benefit from that when that book comes out. That's personal.
Mm-hmm.
So who paid for this to Afghanistan and wherever else she flew around the world to help interview him while they out jogging and, you know, all these other things she had to say about him this past summer. So, I mean, it's probably going to get nasty, and it may not get nasty because of where we are in the world in terms of we're still at war. So people may, but I don't know, because the Republicans in Congress are crazy. And, you know, they drop names like it's nothing. So they might drop some names again and get everybody over there. So who knows?
All right. So how closely tied to this, to the Secret Service sex scandal that happened in South America?
I don't put nothing past nothing right now, because then somebody said that the FBI investigator notified Eric Cantor before he notified on the foreign committee or whatever that committee is, and Eric Cantor ain't even on that committee. So what was that all about?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be
some stuff on here. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So the
question
is,
and how does this all play into Benghazi? I mean, that's the big question that everybody's trying to figure out. Will he still go and testify next week? Because he's due to testify this week in front of that committee on what happened in Benghazi. Will he still go now that he's stepped down and he's resigned? Will they call him in to come and testify? You know, what does that mean for that? I mean, I think it's a made-up story anyway about Benghazi, but there has to be some closure there because we know Secretary Clinton is not going to stay around for the president's second term, so we need to be looking at who's going to be the next Secretary of State. I felt it would have been Susan Rice, but since all of this, you know, the ambassador, all this backlash about Benghazi, it might be harder now for her to get through a Senate confirmation with all these things hanging. So we need to put some closure on Benghazi, and if Petraeus needs to be the fall guy so Susan Rice can step on in and be Secretary of State, I'm all for that. Because he's fine, you know. We can't take nothing away from him. Everything, he's earned all of it. He's earned his stripes, his stars, his general. We can't take none of that away from him.
Right.
So he's good. He's good.
So the question I have then, how deep do you think the media, the FBI, or anybody that's investigating this will take this, right? Because they could, you know, gloss this over and says, you know, we found that no one's at fault. It was a moral issue. You know, there is nothing else other than her checking the emails. I mean, but if you start to dig, you can pretty much find anything, right? So do you believe in the days and weeks to come they're going to start digging, or are they going to just blow this over?
I don't think they're going to blow it over because too many people are talking about it. I mean, it wasn't a secret
to those out in the field with him because they said she was showing up at the office and stuff. So people out there knew about it. They knew what's up. She was doing more than just writing a book. So, you know, but nobody that, you know, fooled by, oh, we're here to do an interview. Yeah, right. So obviously there's, I think it's going to, you know, yes, his reputation will be tarnished. But like I stated, all that he has, we can't take any of that away from him. And she's probably going to get a book deal out of it as well to write about her affair. And so, you know, then she'll get paid. And, again, she'll be back in the limelight. So,
well, I'll tell you one thing. This gives an all new meaning to all in. I wonder how many jokes going to be made about this going forward, man. He was really all in, I'm sure.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, I want to talk about some other all-in people. Cornel West and the comments he made coming up soon. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. And click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Well, Ask
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Cornel West. He's in the news again. Now, of course, he couldn't allow the president to have a few days off without saying something. And man, he has said it all. And it is kind of shocking, too. Now, here's what he said. He said, Obama is a Rockefeller Republican in blackface. Sharpton, Harris Perry, Dyson are up for sale. That's right. That's right. You heard it. That's what Cornel West said. Now, I didn't make this up. I know you think I made it up, but I didn't. That's what Cornel West said. I can't believe it. But anyway, here's what the story said. In an interview with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, our dear brother, Dr. Cornel West, said that while he's happy that Mitt Romney didn't win the presidential election, our foreign policy is still imperialistic. Politicians should be ashamed of spending billions of dollars of campaigns while people are living in poverty, and that President Obama is nothing but a Rockefeller Republican blackface. He says, I think that it's morally obscene and spiritually profane to spend $6 billion on an election, $2 billion on a presidential election, and not have any serious discussion. Poverty, trade unions being pushed against the wall, dealing with stagnating and declining wages when profits are still up and the 1% are doing very well. No talk about drones dropping bombs on innocent people. So we end up with such a narrow, truncated political discourse as the major problems: ecological catastrophe, climate change, global warming. So it's very sad. I mean, I'm glad that there was not a right-wing takeover, but when we end up with a Republican, a Rockefeller Republican, blackface, with Barack Obama, so that our struggle with regard to poverty intensifies. Jima, what in the world is wrong with Dr. Cornel West?
I think Dr. Cornel West probably needs to go to the doctor and go through some sort of psychological evaluation to determine exactly what is ailing him. And this can't be a quick diagnosis. It needs to be one thorough. He might need a stay. You know, they used to do 72-hour holds on people and have them go through a battery of tests. Administered. So he may need to go somewhere and be evaluated, because he has completely fallen off of his chair. He has fallen off of his chair. And because of that, he makes himself less than who he has been called to be.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'm losing you again. I want to get your full comment here. So I don't want to lose you. And so what I heard you say, he's falling out the chair, and I heard you say that he probably needs some therapy, and a battery of tests. But I really need you to weigh in. So I want to take a quick break. And I want you to kind of dial back in, because I want to hear your opinion on this issue. Because I want people to understand a kind of little backstory about Cornel. So I don't know if you were involved in some of our initial coverage on what Cornel West did during the first presidential election with President Obama. Of course, they were in the Hillary camp. When I say they, I'm talking about Cornel West and Tavis Smiley. And they came out and talked really down towards the president. They were, throughout the campaign, they went on talk shows talking more negative about the president. And this is kind of striking, because we expected Tavis Smiley and Cornel West to be soldiers for all of the things we've done in the past, with all of the State of Black America things that they held. And so for them to come out and now start speaking in this fashion, and never has talked about the president like this in the past. They never mentioned this about Bush, never said anything negative about the Clintons. So for them to come out and publicly say this about President Obama, we all know something in the milk ain't clean. So we have Jima on the line. Jima, we want to get you to weigh in on this. So give us your comment again.
I was just stating that, you know, that Dr. West probably needs to go see a doctor. And by that, I mean he has really shown himself to be not who he was called to be. I mean, I have the utmost respect for Dr. West, and it's not that I dislike Dr. West, but I'm just not happy with his timing.
I'm not happy with the fact that he wants to spend all this energy disparaging the president, but has some time to do some good in the community, and he's not doing it. So I'm really trying to figure out what's his motive here. What is he getting out of this? How much is he getting paid? I need to, you know, everything goes back to the money. Follow the money. And, you know, we know the poverty tour was corporately sponsored by Walmart and Wells Fargo and all these other people. So, you know, who's in his gene pool and his family got some perks from Wells Fargo or then got some perks from Walmart or then got, you know, then got a grant or something? I mean, we need to figure out what is driving this, because it just can't be what he's saying it is. It just can't be. There has to be something bigger than that.
And not to mention the language that he used, right? I mean, you can be critical without being, you know, without spitting a lot of vitriol against a person. I mean, he basically said, this is what he said, he's a Rockefeller Republican in blackface. I mean, that's so racist and so dark. I mean, you know, I mean, a person that you know, that's as well spoken and understand how the power of words, and for him to say that, I mean, it's coming from something else, right? I tease all the time about the fact that President Obama didn't allow him in the White House, and his mama, not President Obama's mom, but Cornel West's mama, he was embarrassed in front of his mama, so he'd been holding against the president ever since, because his mom was like, I thought you had some clout. You ain't got no clout. And so now he's just really mad at the president. I say that in a jokingly manner, but I'm not so sure that's not too far from the truth. There's no way that for a man, people, and for him to go out and say this like this, and we know that Mitt Romney came out and publicly said something about the 47%, and I didn't hear this kind of vitriol spit at Mitt Romney.
Right. Did they say anything?
Nothing. At all.
I mean, was there any commentary? Was there any op-ed put out on Huffington Post or the Wall Street Journal or any? Did they say anything about what Mitt Romney said about the 47%? And the answer
no,
to that is no,
nothing
because
at all.
We wouldn't have to look that hard. We would have read it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know the fact that and. I don't even know why he's making this statement, because I put this on a Facebook post. The times that he is, and he said several things about Reverend Sharpton that have just been out of bounds.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go there next. Yeah, we're gonna go there next.
And the fact that Reverend Sharpton has not responded speaks volumes to the type of man that he is, because you know the people that call into his radio show say to him, man, you should just, and, you know, and they use a litany of things they tell him he should say, and he always goes back to that he respects Dr. West, he respects Tavis, we just disagree on this issue. He always takes it back to that, and I find that to be refreshing, because he really could go, and as I stated, the one time Melissa had anything to say about Cornell was in response to what he had said about her, and then she hadn't said nothing else about him. So why does he have to go and bring up their names? Is it because he wanted a show on MSNBC and they didn't give him one? So he's jealous that Reverend Sharpton has a show, Melissa Harris Perry has a show, that Michael Eric Dyson sits in sometimes for Ed Schultz, that Michael Eric Dyson is a guest on not only Melissa's show or Reverend Al's show, but on Ed Schultz's show and Chris Matthews' show and you know, people show in the daytime. I mean, he shows up on everybody's show. So is that what he's mad about? That nobody's calling him to guest commentate? I mean, seriously, what is this all about? And why are you wasting time? Because what you could be doing, Dr. West, is going out in the community that you say you so love, my brother. Go do something.
Yeah, exactly. Go do something, right? Instead of just talking all this craziness. Okay. So you mentioned a couple of things. One, it could be the follow the money, right? Somehow, somewhere, some way, somebody has to benefit from this, because he's spending too much time and energy making interviews and using this type of language because he wants to be relevant or at least be talked about. in the media, because otherwise he would not be. I remember a day, though, and I wrote this on a blog, and I talked about this for so long, when we used to look up to Cornell. We used to talk about, wow, man, this dude is teaching in an Ivy League school. I mean, he got the fro going. He's educated. He has a command of the American language, the English language. I mean, this guy is it. Then you have Tavis to come along and say, you know, he has this year after year of this, you know, what we should do with Black America. They come out with these two books and says, here's our roadmap and let's do all these great things. Then we get an African American president and they just lose their flipping mind. So I'm with you. We need to follow the money, because somewhere, some in the milk ain't clean.
Yeah, something is going on that we don't know about.
So let's shift now to your homeboy, the man you love so much. I'm going to have to check Red Red, man. I need to find out what's going on with y'all. But anyway, but he has some choice words for Rem Al Sharpton, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, and Dr. Melissa Harris Perry as well. While, now this is what, on News.1, this is what the article said. While the aforementioned scholars have been extremely vocal in their support of the Obama administration, Tavis Smiley, who I just mentioned a while ago, who was interviewed along with Dr. West, said their support comes at the expense of critical thinking and a legitimate push for Black agenda. He goes on to say, Lincoln isn't Lincoln if Frederick Douglass isn't pushing him. FDR isn't FDR if A. Philip Randolph and Eleanor Roosevelt aren't pushing him. LBJ isn't LBJ if Martin Luther King isn't pushing him. We don't believe in making excuses. We believe that if Obama is not pushed, he's going to be a transactional president and not a transformational president. And we believe that the time is now for action and no longer accommodation. But that doesn't happen unless you're pushed. Dr. West said that Smiley was just being very kind and gave his opinion to Goodman straight, no chaser. I love Brother Mike Dyson, but we're living in a society where everybody is up for sale. Hint, hint. Everything is up for sale. Another hint. And he and Brother Sharpton and Sister Melissa and others, they have sold their souls for a mess of Obama pottage. And we invite him back to the Black prophetic tradition after Obama leaves. But at the moment, they want insider access. Hint. And they want to tell those kind of lies. They want to turn their back to poor and working people. Now, so here is where it goes back to my original comment about they want insider access, right? And they want to tell those kind of lies. So it goes to show you. I don't think I'm too far off the mark when Cornel West and his mom was trying to get close to the president and Obama didn't let him in. And so now he's been kind of teed off ever since. And I can see why. What do you think? Why now this shift towards Dyson, Harris Perry, and Al Sharpton?
Okay, let's for historical sake remind people that Reverend Sharpton, Melissa Harris Perry, Michael Eric Dyson were all supporters of Obama before anybody else was. They were never transplant Hillary supporters. Let's
right.
be real clear about that.
That's right, that's right.
They came out the gate in support of Senator Barack Obama. Cornell and Tavis was for Senator Hillary Clinton. Let's just be clear about that. So let's just put all this back into perspective. So here you have, so they don't have to yearn for access. They already have it. They already have it because they was there in the beginning. Melissa goes back to when the president was teaching at the University of Chicago. She knows him from, as does Dr. Dyson. They go back to before he was a household name.
They were colleagues.
Have to
absolutely
jockey for position or access. They have access. And let's be clear, Tavis had access as well. Tavis allowed his ego, when then candidate Obama did not come to the state of Black America to either announce his candidacy or be part of that panel, and he offered Michelle to come, Tavis was like, Michelle is not running. You are. His ego got in the way. And so
he couldn't see the
Hillary
big picture
Clinton
at the time.
Went,
he didn't see the vision at the time.
That's right, because his ego got in the way. See, Tavis had access. If you remember the original conversations, people talked about he was already in. So it was his own behavior that put him outside the house. The president didn't put him out. He put himself out. So, you know, we have to be real clear about that. So when Dr. West makes these statements about what Dr. Melissa Harris Perry is doing and what Dr. Michael Eric Dyson is doing, we need to remind people, these people have known him since he was a community organizer. So they already have relationships. They were never on the bandwagon. They didn't just jump on when he won in Iowa. They were already there. So that's why it pains me when Dr. West makes these statements, because he's sending out mixed messages. It's wrong information.
Yeah,
and for
right.
him to be of the learned persuasion, he should know better than that. And if you want to call somebody out on something, you call them out on something that's legitimate. Because I guarantee you, the conversation that should happen between Dr. West and Dr. Dyson is not going to be a pretty one. Because
you're
dealing with two professors that is deep in the hip-hop culture. They're going to both come out hip-hop people. They're going to forget they both doctors. And that's a conversation I'd pay to see.
So I haven't heard Dyson say anything yet, or haven't heard his commentary yet. So you think it's coming soon, or you think he's just going to kind of brush it aside? I mean, these are harsh words now.
It depends. I think he'll say something if he's asked. See, they're going to take a page from Reverend Sharpton on this one. And Reverend Sharpton very seldom makes mention of things that people have said about him unless you ask him. If you never ask him, you'll never hear him just all of a sudden bring up and what Tavis had to say the other day. Because if you recall the last major incident, Reverend Sharpton had Tavis call into his radio show
and
to talk about what had been said on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. So, you know, Reverend Al ain't going to back down from nothing, because when he's right, he's right.
Exactly.
So the fact that you want to call me some names, that says more about you, Dr. West, than it does about me. And I don't suspect that Michael Eric Dyson, you know, the only way it'll happen, and here's how it'll happen. If he's hosting somebody's show this week, and he gets a chance to do his final thoughts or his closing thoughts, he'll bring it up. If he's not hosting anywhere and nobody just asks him the question, then I don't think you're here. And unless he writes about it, he might send something to news1.com in response to. He very well may. But
you're talking about Dyson.
I don't know that he should, because then that just gives Dr. West some attention that he don't necessarily need.
So you know, I was thinking about that, too. I think I was thinking about the fact that me and how I react or respond to situations, I mean, it's in a different generation than President Obama. And I admire him and I aspire to be calm, cool, and collected like that. But I don't know if I'm that person. I don't know if my culture, my upbringing, and the things that I've been faced with in the past allow me to muster or to hold off the energy that it takes to be that person. And so, you know, I pray that my son is able to do that. And he's showing good signs of that now, not to be, you know, that way in a lot of instances. But I'm not that person. So, you know, Dr. Dyson seems to be of my generation, of my mindset in a lot of cases, and will lash out, because we've seen him do it when they were talking about the Twitter thing, right? When he mentioned something. Yeah, and so he went off. But he did it in a well-spoken way. And so, you know, I can imagine Dyson coming out, and I can imagine West coming out, and they having a war of words, if you will. position and posturing, using some type of rhetorical type of combat, if you will, almost as
right.
if a rapper would do at a rap contest or something along those lines. But I can see
right.
him doing it in kind of a in a battle of intellects, if you will. So, but
right.
I do expect Dr. Dyson to come out and have an opinion about Dr. West's comments, because I think it was personal. I believe if he was talking in general, and I believe that he was just saying, you know, kind of, using the term like they used to do to talk about academics or academia or talking about the ivory towers, I think Dr. Dyson perhaps could, you know, muster up enough energy to let it go. But in this instance, he was direct, personal, and the fact that he did it in that manner, when Tavis tried to offer up the olive branch in such a way to, or try to be more tactful, Dr. West immediately say, "No, I'm going to give you straight no chaser," and he mentioned him by name. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next week, because I know this is something new, and I know in a lot of cases as I get older, I want to take a minute or two before I respond to certain situations, but it depends. I mean, I try to meet people where they are. I've told you on many occasions, you know, if you say something to me, you try to call me out in public and you're wrong, I'm going to call you back out. I don't care who the audience is. And so it'll be interesting to see if Dr. Dyson takes the same approach. So we're approaching the final minutes of the show, and I want to kind of shift the moment to a lighter note here. So a couple of days ago, after the president was elected, he actually spoke in front of an audience that was the people that got him there. And so I want to play for you a few moments of what happened. He got emotional, I'll say. And I want you to take a listen, and I want to get you to respond. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Take a listen. Let me get you to respond.
So, you guys, you know, I try to picture myself when I was your age, and I first moved to Chicago at the age of 25, and I had this vague inkling about making a difference. I didn't really know how to do it. I didn't have a structure, there wasn't a presidential campaign at the time that I could attach myself to. Ronald Reagan had just been reelected and was incredibly popular. And so I came to Chicago knowing that somehow I wanted to make sure that my life attached itself to helping kids get a great education or helping people living in poverty to get decent jobs, to be able to work and have dignity. Make sure that the people didn't have to go to the emergency room to get help there. And you know, I ended up being a community organizer out on the south side of Chicago. A group of churches were willing to hire me. And I didn't know at all what I was doing. And you know, the work that I did in those communities changed me much more than I changed the communities there, because it has taught me the hopes and aspirations and the grit and the resilience of ordinary people, and it taught me the fact that under the surface differences, we all have common hopes and we all have common dreams, and it taught me something about how I handled disappointment. And what it meant to work hard on a common endeavor. And I grew up. I became a man during that process. And so when I come here and I look at all of you, what comes to mind is it's not that you guys actually remind me of myself. It's the fact that you are so much better than I was in so many ways. You're smarter and you're better organized. And... You you're more effective. And so I'm absolutely confident that all of you are going to do just amazing things in your lives. And, you know, the what Bobby Kennedy called the ripples of hope that come out when you throw a stone in a lake, that's going to be you. You know, I'm just looking around the room and I'm thinking, wherever you guys end up, in whatever states, in whatever capacities, whether you're in the private sector, the non-for-profit, or some of you decide to go into public service, you're just going to do great things. And that's why, even before last night's results, I felt that the work that I had done in running for office had come full circle. Because what you guys have done means that the work that I'm doing is important. I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of all of you. And what you just said,
you know, that was really amazing watching the president speak so candidly to all of the supporters, but not just the supporters, all of the hardworking people that actually got him or put him or helped put him in the position to be an historical president. I mean, we will be talking about this presidency for generations to come. You know, I don't ever know, you know, what the future holds, but I can say with a high probability of certainty that they will be talking about his presidency for years and years to come. They will be studying his campaign strategy, the Obama doctrine when it comes to foreign affairs, foreign policy, how he got health care to be passed, the Lilly Ledbetter Act. All of the things he's done to bring us out of this massive recession, you know, it's going to be a long time coming before we ever see any other leader to be able to do what President Barack Obama done. And so I'm so proud to be a part of that. You know, when I used to send in my donations, when I get those emails to make phone calls, when I get out and I did some of the phone banks that I did during the election, and it makes me feel proud to be a part of this. And when I think about the whole notion that President Obama said, if you push me up, I'll pull you up, that gives me a whole different perspective of the whole crabs in the bucket syndrome. When you hear, you know, every time someone tries to get out of the bucket, you know, we pull each other down. Well, we should be taking a different perspective on our life today. We should be looking at the fact that, yeah, if I push you up and I get you up to the top of the hill, then you reach your arm down and you pull me up too. So that means we both get to be at the top. And so, and it is my judgment, is that what we did for the president? And so now going forward, we have laid the foundation for healthcare that will be here to stay. They will only improve on it, just like they've done for Medicare, Medicaid, and for they've done other social policies that have a profound impact on our society. So this election was historical in many, many, many ways, and I'm sure you'll find your way that you can be able to celebrate this monumental election. But it is no doubt in my mind that this has been the greatest election of all times and will be studied for years and years to come. It is definitely a historical event. All right, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce. I'm able
a long time coming, but I know change gonna come.